Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
Tributes continue to pour in for Canada's 18th Prime Minister, Brian Mulroney, someone who knew him very well and liked him very much, despite their political differences, is Canada's ambassador to the United Nations. So, joining us now from New York City, there's Bob Rae, who was also Premier of Ontario from 1990 to 95. And Ambassador Rae, as I welcome you to the program, I have noted in some of the coverage that the first guy to call you when you became Premier in 1990 was Brian Mulroney. What do you remember from that call?
I remember it very vividly. I was in my old office because I hadn't yet moved into my new one, and he was extremely, what can I say, avuncular, very chatty, very friendly, and joked with a couple of things he said that stuck with me. I've still stuck with me. One of them was that he said, I hope you're enjoying yourself and taking it all in and really savoring the sweet taste of victory. I said, yeah, it's great. It's wonderful. And he said, no, you don't understand. It's not going to get any better. Like, it's just going to be downhill from here. You got to understand the way it works.
He wasn't wrong about that, was he?
No, absolutely right. And I would give the same advice to others, is enjoy your victories. I mean, I had a few others, and I hope to have some more. But it's important to remember that at some point reality sets in. I think he referred to your profession as, you know, when the jackals of the media turn on you, which they will do.
Present company accepted, of course, I'm sure you meant
of
to
course,
say.
I wouldn't refer you to that way. But yeah. So, he was that kind of a person. Hmm. And I've talked, even since he's passed, I've talked to a lot of people who commented on my comment and said, yeah, you know, he called me, he talked to me, and I had no idea. And he reached out. I didn't know him that well, but and this is not only true when the time he was in government, he was prime minister, it remained the case right up to the end in terms of his private life. I mean, he reached out a lot to people, and
Let me jump in with this, because you of course were a New Democrat at the time. He's a conservative. Most of your support base, if not all of it, would have despised him by now. And I wonder whether you at some point thought to yourself, how am I going to work with this guy? How's this actually going to work?
All the time. I mean, it was a constant challenge at the time. We were in office together for 3 years, and then I had 2 years with Mr. Chrétien. The funny thing is that in personal terms, I got on very well with both of them. I had no personal challenges. I liked them both. I respected them both. They didn't particularly like each other that much, but they managed to work out a relationship. I think the challenge for us was that on policy grounds, on GST, on the free trade agreement, which had been concluded and he'd won the election. But the most important bone of contention between us, Steve, was this decision that the Mulroney government made in 1989, which was to say that we will cap the transfers to Ontario for programs, and we won't cap British Columbia's, we will cap Ontario's, but we won't cap anybody else's. And this was just at the moment when we were on the brink of falling into a recession. So all of our payments for welfare, all of our payments on all of the things that are covered by the Canada Assistance Plan, our costs were going up just naturally, just by virtue of what was happening in the economy, much, much faster than any federal compensation. So we were falling further and further behind. And I had an ongoing argument with the government of Canada about how this discrimination against Ontario needed to end. He was not happy with that. He did not like to hear me saying it. We nearly blew up a premier's meeting because of it. And we then went on to release a report on it. And eventually, although it took a long time, eventually the federal government conceded the point. But by that time, the damage had been done. You know, the Martin budget, which was not a great budget for us in 94. So, I mean, I think a lot of times people expected the premier of Ontario is going to be this gentle guy in the middle of the country who's going to try to be, you know, just be, you know, joke everybody along and move it along and get to a point. And I felt in the years that I was there that I had to be a bit more of a regional advocate and provincial advocate, because it was true and it was hurting us, and obviously it was hurting the provincial economy. So that was the one issue that made it hard. He had all kinds of reasons for not wanting to be seen with me. So,
well, let me take you to an instance where he was happy to be seen with you, and that is because you two did manage to find a modus vivendi on the Charlottetown Accord in 1992, where you came together. Now, tell me, he managed to get all of the premiers from all different parties on side for a constitutional agreement, which anybody in their right mind would have said, that's impossible to do. What skills did he bring to the dance that enabled that to happen?
Well, I think he did it once with me. I felt he could do it again. I do think that having lost that ratification process, he was very good in the negotiation process. And I can remember one anecdote in Charlottetown itself when we were just coming down to the last moments. As often happens in a negotiation, one person will say, well, I can't live with this. To which another person says, ah, well, if you can't live with that, I can't live. And all of a sudden you can see the agreement starts to get very tenuous. And the prime minister turned to me and said, okay, you take Wells into the corner and I'll take Bourassa into another corner. And let's meet again in 10 minutes. So we broke up the meeting, and I went off to talk to Mr. Wells about something, and he went off to talk to Robert Bourassa about something. And we came back, and he and I chatted. After that, we went to another room. We chatted together. I said, I think we can do this. I think we can do that. I think we've got it. And we came back and said, I think we've got a deal. And we stared at both of them, and they both sort of said, okay, you know. But they accepted it. Now, Charlottetown was hard fought for, mainly because it was much bigger than Meech. It included Senate reform. It had significant Indigenous participation and had whole sections in the accord on negotiations for self-government. It was, if I may say so, it was a very progressive document and a significant elaboration of some of the agreements on distinct society and other things that were in the Meech Lake Accord. But again, the failure was not in the negotiation process or getting 10 premiers to agree. The failure was in the ratification, this time a referendum, because the prime minister felt we needed to go to the whole people. And he felt at the beginning that he had all the wind in his sails and he could do it. But in truth, we were not able to get it over the finish line.
Well, let the record show Ontario did. Ontario passed it by more than just over 50%.
Just not by much more than 50%. Mm-hmm. It did pass it. But you're right. I mean, that's really what that process is, what cemented our relationship, because we really did share a view about the country and what it took flexibility and it took imagination and it took bringing people together to make it happen. Mm. And I think the Prime Minister was very generous in any public statements he made about Charlottetown in ascribing some of it to me and to others who very actively participated in that process.
Mm-hmm. In our last couple of minutes here, let's acknowledge his successes were big, but so were also his mistakes. How much do you think the mistakes that he made, not just in office, but after he left the prime ministership, mar his overall legacy, in your view?
I think it's inevitable. I don't think in office, I think, look, in office, he did what he did. I mean, we all make mistakes in the sense of we make some policy decisions that people don't like, and that's life. I think the things that got him into trouble afterwards were the ethical issues that everybody's familiar with. And inevitably, those things can get seized upon by people. My view is that he made a terrible mistake in judgment. He admits to it publicly. He said it to me personally, saying, how could I have been so stupid? And I must confess that I was taken aback by it in terms of the misjudgment. But in the end, I think if you know him as I did, you sort of say, well, it happened. And so, yeah, that's part of the picture. But as Oliver Cromwell said when sitting for his portrait, paint me as you see me, warts and all. And so that's how we see Mr. Mulroney. He had his flaws, he had his faults, but he had great strengths. He was a leader who led by conviction, and he really did try to do some big things that were important. I didn't agree with every inch of all of them, but I think you can't take away from his abilities and his likability, frankly. He was a very hard person. I mean, the old Irish joke is, what's the point of having a grudge if you can't hold it forever? But the reality is, it's very difficult to hold a grudge against Brian Mulroney because of his charm and his persistence and his ability to bring people together in difficult circumstances. And, you know, let's not forget that Brian in his heyday was probably the most popular politician in the country, won the biggest majority ever granted to anybody. And yeah, he tried to do some great things with that. He also had flaws and limitations, as we all do. But I think I've always felt that at the moment of passing, and even before, and things that I've said to you and to our five listeners tonight is, look, I've said to Brian himself, as he knew that he was dying, and he was not dying, but he was failing, and he was feeling more frail. And I think, and all of us have over the years reached out to him and talked to him, you had to say to him, look, don't beat yourself up for what you didn't do, or even for what you did, sins of omission and sins of commission. Take some pride in what you were able to do, and take some pride in the kind of person that you are. He was a kind man. He was a generous man. He didn't have a lot of mean-spiritedness in him. We had some old political scores to settle and so on, but he was somebody who gave a lot and who cared a lot. And above all, he did it with humor and he did it with grace.
And with that, Ambassador Ray, I'm going to thank you for joining us on the agenda tonight and sharing your views about the late Brian Mulroney. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.